and allow himself less and less to be led by circumstances and external influences. He will soon discover how great a source of strength is available to him in these moments thus set apart. He will begin no longer to get angry at things which formerly annoyed him. Countless things he formerly feared cease to alarm him. He acquires a new outlook on life. Formerly he may have approached some occupation in a faint-hearted way. He would say, "Oh, I lack the power to do this as well as I could wish." Now this thought does not occur to him, but rather a quite different thought. Henceforth he says to himself, quote, "I will summon all my strength to do my work as well as I possibly can," unquote. And he suppresses the thought which makes him faint-hearted, for he knows that this very thought might be the cause of a worse performance on his part, and that in any case it cannot contribute to the improvement of his work. And thus, thought after thought, each fraught with advantage to his whole life, flows into the student's outlook. They take the place of those that had a hampering, weakening effect. He begins to steer his own ship on a secure course through the waves of life, whereas it was formerly battered to and fro by these waves. This calm and serenity react on the whole being. They assist the growth of the inner man, and with the inner man, those faculties also grow, which lead to higher knowledge. For it is by his progress in this direction that the student gradually reaches the point where he himself determines the manner in which the impressions of the outer world shall affect him. Thus he may hear a word spoken with the object of wounding or vexing him. Formerly it would indeed have wounded or vexed him, but now that he treads the path to higher knowledge, he is able, before the word has found its way to his inner self, to take from it the sting which gives it the power to wound or vex. Take another example. We easily become impatient when we are kept waiting, but if we tread the path to higher knowledge, we so steep ourselves in our moments of calm with the feeling of the uselessness of impatience that henceforth, on every occasion of impatience, this feeling is immediately present within us. The impatience that was about to make itself felt vanishes, and an interval which would otherwise have been wasted in expressions of impatience will be filled with useful observation, which can be made while waiting. Now the scope and significance of these facts must be realized. We must bear in mind that the higher man within us is in constant development. But only the state of calm and serenity here described renders an orderly development possible. The waves of outward life constrain the inner man from all sides, if, instead of mastering this outward life, it masters him. Such a man is like a plant which tries to expand in a cleft in the rock and is stunted in its growth until new space is given it. No outward forces can supply space to the inner man. It can only be supplied by the inner calm which man himself gives to his soul. Outward circumstances can only alter the course of his outward life. They can never awaken the inner spiritual man. The student must himself give birth to a new and higher man within himself. This higher man now becomes the inner ruler who directs the circumstances of the outer man with sure guidance. As long as the outer man has the upper hand and control, this inner man is his slave and therefore cannot unfold his powers. If it depends on something other than myself whether I should get angry or not, I am not master of myself, or to put it better, I have not yet found the ruler within myself. I must develop the faculty of letting the impressions of the outer world approach me only in the way in which I myself determine. Then only do I become in the real sense a student. And only in as far as the student earnestly seeks this power can he reach the goal. It is of no importance how far anyone can go in a given time. The point is that he should earnestly seek. Many have striven for years without noticing any appreciable progress, but many of those who did not despair, but remained unshaken, have then quite suddenly achieved the inner victory. No doubt a great effort is required in many stations of life to provide these moments of inner calm, But the greater the effort needed, the more important is the achievement. In spiritual science, everything depends upon the energy, inward truthfulness, and uncompromising sincerity with which we confront our own selves, with all our deeds and actions, as a complete stranger. But only one side of the student's inner activity is characterized by this birth of his own higher being. Something else is needed in addition. Even if he confronts himself as a stranger, it is only himself that he contemplates. He looks on those experiences and actions with which he is connected through his particular station of life. He must now disengage himself from it and rise beyond to a purely human level, which no longer has anything to do with his own special situation. He must pass on to the contemplation of those things which would concern him as a human being, even if he lived under quite different circumstances and in quite a different situation. In this way, something begins to live within him which ranges above the purely personal. His gaze is directed to worlds higher than those with which everyday life connects him, and thus he begins to feel and realize as an inner experience that he belongs to those higher worlds. These are worlds concerning which his senses and his daily occupation can tell him nothing. Thus he now shifts the central point of his being to the inner part of his nature. He listens to the voices within him which speak to him in his moments of tranquility. He cultivates an intercourse with the spiritual world. He is removed from the everyday world. Its noise is silenced. All around him there is silence. He puts away everything that reminds him of such impressions from without. Calm inward contemplation and converse with the purely spiritual world fill his soul. Such tranquil contemplation must become a natural necessity in the life of the student. He is now plunged in a world of thought. He must develop a living feeling for this silent thought activity. He must learn to love what the Spirit pours into him. He will soon cease to feel that this thought world is less real than the everyday things which surround him. He begins to deal with his thoughts as with things in space. And the moment approaches when he begins to feel that which reveals itself in the silent inward thought work to be much higher, much more real than the things in space. He discovers that something living expresses itself in this thought world. He sees that his thoughts do not merely harbor shadow pictures, but that through them hidden beings speak to him. Out of the silence, speech becomes audible to him. Formerly, sound only reached him through his ear. Now it resounds through his soul. An inner language, an inner word, is revealed to him. This moment, when first experienced, is one of greatest rapture for the student. An inner light is shed over the whole external world, and a second life begins for him. Through his being there pours a divine stream from a world of divine rapture. This life of the soul in thought, which gradually widens into a life in spiritual being, is called by Gnosis and by spiritual science meditation, or contemplative reflection. This meditation is the means to supersensible knowledge. But the student in such moments must not merely indulge in feelings. He must not have indefinite sensations in his soul. That would only hinder him from reaching true spiritual knowledge. His thoughts must be clear, sharp, and definite, and he will be helped in this if he does not cling blindly to the thoughts that rise within him. Rather, must he permeate himself with the lofty thoughts by which men already advanced and possessed of the Spirit were inspired at such moments. He should start with the writings which themselves had their origin in just such revelation during meditation. In the mystic, Gnostic, and spiritual scientific literature of today, the student will find such writings, and in them the material for his meditation. The seekers of the Spirit have themselves set down in such writings the thoughts of the divine science which the Spirit has directed his messengers to proclaim to the world. Through such meditation, a complete transformation takes place in the student. He begins to form quite new conceptions of reality. All things acquire a fresh value for him. It cannot be repeated too often that this transformation does not alienate him from the world. He will in no way be estranged from his daily tasks and duties, for he comes to realize that the most insignificant action he has to accomplish, the most insignificant experience which offers itself to him, stands in connection with cosmic beings and cosmic events. When once this connection is revealed to him in his moments of contemplation, he comes to his daily activities with a new, fuller power. For now he knows that his labor and his suffering are given and endured for the sake of a great spiritual cosmic whole. Not weariness, but strength to live springs from meditation. With firm step, the student passes through life. No matter what it may bring him, he goes forward erect. In the past, he knew not why he labored and suffered, but now he knows. It is obvious that such meditation leads more surely to the goal if conducted under the direction of experienced persons who know of themselves how everything may best be done, and their advice and guidance should be sought. Truly, no one loses his freedom thereby. What would otherwise be mere uncertain groping in the dark becomes under this direction purposeful work. All who apply to those possessing knowledge and experience in these matters will never apply in vain. Only they must realize that what they seek is the advice of a friend, not the domination of a would-be ruler. It will always be found that they who really know are the most modest of men, and that nothing is further from their nature than what is called the lust for power. I'm on page 33, the beginning of the first full paragraph on that page.